Good evening. Welcome to For the Love of Pets podcast. I'm Dr. Donald Shreves, owner and operator of the Potts Grove Animal Hospital here in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Tonight we're going to talk about parasites. I know it's everybody's favorite topic to talk about, things that come in the poop, but it's an important thing to know, especially knowing what type of parasites your dogs can have and what kind of parasites they can give to you and your children. So stay with us. We're going to talk about all these different types of parasites, both external and internal, and we're going to give you some information so that you can keep yourself and your family safe. So stick with us, and I'll be back in just a moment. All right, good evening, and welcome back to For the Love of Pets. Again, I'm Dr. Donald Shreves, owner and operator of the Potts Grove Animal Hospital. Tonight, we're going to talk about parasites, and this is going to be a two-part podcast. So tonight, we're going to talk about external parasites. And these are parasites that you're going to find on the outside of the body. Some of these are contagious to people, which is a term we call zoonotic. So if you hear me say zoonotic, what it means is that it is transmissible from animals to people. Now, there are a fair amount of zoonotic diseases, but not a ton of zoonotic diseases, and not all of them are caused by parasites, okay? So we're going to talk about zoonotic diseases in general at a later date on a different podcast, but we are going to talk about them in the context of parasites and how certain parasites can transmit these diseases to you and your family. All right, so again, tonight we're talking about external parasites. So these are parasites that are found outside of the body, usually on the skin or in the ears. So these are things like grubs and fleas and ticks and mange. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And then on the second half of this podcast, we're going to talk about parasites part two. We're going to talk about the internal parasites. So the ones that are in the intestinal tract, we'll even probably briefly touch on heartworm as well, but the majority of it will be about intestinal worms. We're going to save that one for the second half of this talk. But tonight, we're going to talk about external parasites. So the first one we're going to talk about is one that's technical name is called Cuterebra. We kind of commonly call this a grub. Now, this is something we tend to see in young dogs and cats, and I'll be honest, I mostly see it in young kittens when it happens. These are a type of fly, and so the Cuterebra, what they do is they lay eggs on the fur of your animal, very often a kitten, very often a puppy, and then these eggs will hatch, and then the larva of these eggs burrow into your pet's skin and eventually form a cyst around the larva. The cyst usually has a small hole at the top, and you can usually see the head of the Cuterebra in there. So that's how you kind of know it's a grub just by the way it looks. And what you want to do is you got to get that larva out of there. You're usually going to go in, grab a hold of it, and pull it out. Sometimes you may have to open widen the opening a little bit to get it out, because believe it or not, these things grow into about an inch long. They're kind of disgusting looking, but they are things that we see. You want to be very careful when you're removing this. This is why you want to have a doctor do it, because if the larva should tear or break when you're removing it, it can certainly lead to a anaphylactic reaction in your animal, which can be very dangerous for them. So you want to make sure it comes out in one piece. The hole will eventually seal up on its own. Usually we want to treat them with antibiotics because there's often a secondary infection. It's kind of like a oozy, pussy mess in this hole. But once you get the Cuterebra larva out, you put them on antibiotics, it usually heals up and there is no long-term lasting effect. This has no zoonosis potential at all. It's not something that goes on to people in most cases. It's almost always animals, dogs, cats, squirrels, rabbits, as well as rodents. Number two, fleas. Fleas are wingless insects. They don't fly. They jump, but they don't fly. There are several types of fleas that can infest people, and occasionally they can, or excuse me, infest animals, and occasionally can infest people as well. People do get bit by fleas. Now, we are not their chosen host. They would prefer to be on the animal that has dense fur that they can hide underneath of versus our skin, which doesn't have a lot of dense hair or fur that they can hide from. But in a pinch, they will bite. If you're in a home that's well infested, you will probably get bit by fleas. That causes itching and irritation on a person, as well as you could potentially have a flea bite reaction, just like your animals will have. So they bite, they feed off of the blood of your animal, and then they go have baby fleas. Now, if you have a severe enough infestation on your animal or in your home, your animal can certainly develop anemia, which is low red blood cells, because they have so many fleas that are sucking their blood that they just simply are running low on blood. And that can become a very serious problem in heavy enough infestation. The other problem with fleas is that they transmit tapeworms. Fleas do contain tapeworms in a lot of cases. So when a flea bites an animal, especially like a cat, it hurts. So it starts to lick at the area where it just got bit, and it ingests the flea. And when when it does that, then you end up with tapeworms sometimes, okay? And what you're going to see, little tiny pieces of rice-looking segments being passed out in the poop. And that's something that, again, we want to get cleared up if your cat or your dog should develop that, not only for their safety, but tapeworm segments are also, in some cases, susceptible to humans. And we'll talk about that more when we get to the second half of this podcast, when we talk about the internal parasites. Okay, so how will you know if your dog has fleas? Where should you look? Common places to look: at the rear end, at the base of the tail, the rear third of the body in dogs, and the front third and rear third of the body in cats. So cats will have them up around their head. Dogs will have them primarily more around their tail end. Cats will have it around the tail end. You can also look on the belly, okay, because there's no real fur there. It's not heavy, so oftentimes you'll see them running there. Sometimes you won't see fleas, but you'll see what little black pieces of what looks like pepper on your dog's skin. That is flea dirt. It's flea poop. It's digested blood. So if you want to verify, is it flea dirt or not, simply take a couple pieces, put it on a white paper towel, wet it down, give it a few minutes to dissolve, and then just kind of streak it across the white towel. If it streaks red, you got flea dirt. If you got flea dirt, you got fleas. The problem is, by the time most of us know our animals have fleas, our home has already started to become infested. So you want to get on top of the infestation quickly, because here's just a little information about a flea life cycle. After a flea takes a blood meal, they deposit their eggs on the animal. So in a lot of cases, the eggs are initially placed on the animal. Then as your pet moves around your home, those eggs fall off of him and end up into the house around, especially as he's scratching and itching because of the flea bites. So once they're spread throughout the environment, those eggs are going to hatch after about 2 to 12 days into larvae that feed in the environment. Now, a single pair of breeding fleas can produce as many as 20,000 fleas in a three-month period. So, it only takes two fleas to turn into 20,000 in 3 months. The larvae of the flea will molt two times, anywhere from 2 to 200 days, and then the older larva will spin a cocoon, which could remain for anywhere from 1 week to 1 year before they hatch out of the cocoon. When they come out of the cocoon, they are hungry and ready to feed and continue the life cycle. The cocoon, once they're in the cocoon, it's hard to get rid of them. That's why it takes such a long time, because that cocoon is difficult to get rid of and can last a long time. That's why, unfortunately, it didn't happen overnight. It's not going to go away overnight. So, the way to prevent flea infestations, of course, is with a good anti-flea and tick product. And we did talk about flea and tick products in a previous podcast, so you know where my recommendations stand on that. And if not, go back and re-listen to that one. But minimum in our area here in southeastern Pennsylvania, I do recommend protecting from April through usually December. Sometimes it's a little earlier. Sometimes it's a little later. Depends on when it gets really cold, when we get snow, when we get frost. Okay? So if you don't get frost in the middle of January, guess what? You should treat for January as well. But at minimum through December. Now, tick infestations, and we'll talk about ticks in a few minutes, you definitely want to protect through the wintertime, because unfortunately we do have ticks all year round in southeastern PA, even in the cold, even in the snow. So good anti-flea tick products is how you protect your home and how you protect your animal from fleas. All right, so the next external parasite we're going to talk about is lice. Now, lice are little small wing-like insects that can occasionally infest pets. It's not a common thing that we see that often, but they are out there. There's two types of lice that we see, the sucking lice and the biting lice. Biting lice are very irritating to dogs, but they don't penetrate the skin, but they feed on the dead skin, hair, and body secretions, and they can be very irritating. However, sucking lice do penetrate the skin and feed on blood, okay? You can get considerable blood loss from this if it's a bad enough infestation. Dogs are primarily the host when it comes to the sucking lice. The biting lice can affect both, but the sucking lice are primarily on dogs. Cats really don't get this type of lice. Lice are very host specific, okay? So dog and cat lice don't affect people. So your kids are not going to get lice from your dog or your cat, okay? In a lot of cases, treatment's going to be clipping the fur and then using topical treatments to help get rid of the lice. So as we said before, ticks are also an external parasite. They are a blood-sucking parasite like fleas, okay? And they can infest most animals, and they do bite people as well, okay? So we can be bitten by ticks. In our area here, we primarily have four types of ticks: the brown dog tick, the American dog tick, the Lone Star tick, and the deer tick. And the deer tick is the one that carries Lyme disease. And on average, most ticks can carry a lot of diseases. This includes Haemobartonella, Babesiosa, Ehrlichia, Anaplasmosis, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, Lyme, of course, and there's several others as well. But those are just some of the big ones that most people have heard of. So ticks deposit the eggs in the environment, okay? They don't deposit their eggs on the animal like fleas do. Ticks then, they hatch, and then the nymphal stages, and then the adult stages bite the animals and feed on their blood. And then while they're feeding, bacteria and diseases are transmitted from the tick into the animal. A lot of these diseases are very dangerous and can cause a lot of sickness in your pet or yourself, including things like I said, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever and Lyme. So again, you want to keep ticks off of your dog. Best way to do it, again, good anti-flea, anti-tick product is your best way. It's not going to keep them off of them, but it's going to kill them relatively quickly so that they don't have time to bite you. So that's the way I recommend preventing tick problems rather than having to deal with the diseases later. Now, the last external type of parasite we're going to talk about, there's two types, but in general, it goes by the term mange. And you've always heard people saying about the old mangy dog. Well, what is mange? Mange is a microscopic mite, and there are two different kinds that we see in animals primarily, the demodectic mange and the sarcoptic mange. The first type we're going to talk about is the demodectic mange, okay? Now, most dogs and cats are going to have a small number of demodex mites in their hair follicles normally. So there's a small amount on the body. A normal immune system keeps them in check so they don't get crazy and you don't see a lot of hair loss. The problem is that these mites can very adversely affect animals with suppressed immune systems or developing immune systems. So a lot of times when I see demodectic mange, I see it in puppies. Okay. What happens is the numbers of these mites get out of whack and they live within the hair follicles. So you start to see hair loss. Demodectic mange is often non-paretic, so not itchy. You just simply start to see areas of hair loss, primarily in puppies especially is when I see it. The way you diagnose it is usually by either doing a skin scrape or a trichogram, so you can actually visualize the mites on the microscope. And once you've seen them, then you can start dealing with them. Demodex can be treated several different ways, oral ivermectin, where you give them ivermectin on a daily basis. You can certainly do oral milbemycin. They used to do certain types of dips in the past. There was one called Mitaban dip, that work that you did every couple of weeks, but it was really rough on the patient. So a lot of different ways to kill off the mites. I tend to use ivermectin orally. It seems to work very well, though it does take time. It's not an easily defeated mite, but it does work in time. You keep doing it orally, and you keep rechecking them every 2 weeks, scraping or trichogramming them, until you get 3 negative scrapings. At that point, it is usually resolved. Now, can it come back? Certainly possible, depending on what was the initiating cause. If it was a developing puppy, not so much of a recurrent problem, though it does sometimes happen, especially if they get stressed again. I do find like surgical stressing, neutering, and spaying sometimes can cause recurrence of the Demodex, so you want to be careful on that. If it's an older animal that is immunosuppressed, however, that got Demodex, then you definitely want to be concerned about recurrence. Demodex can also affect the feet, okay? In which case, you know, the feet get very red. They get kind of almost blistery and very itchy to the animal. It is one of the few times I see Demodex being itchy. And those are a tough one to get rid of. Again, you deal with it the same way, but it can be hard to get rid of. The other type of mange that we know is sarcoptic mange, otherwise known as scabies. Now, this is a different type of mite. Instead of like Demodex that lives within the hair follicle, these guys actually burrow their way through the skin, okay, which causes the skin to get red, irritated, very itchy. And a lot of times you'll get secondary infections common with the red, irritated skin. So trying to localize Demodex in a skin scrape is difficult at best because they are a mite that is moving. So you could do 10 scrapes and you might find it in one if you're lucky. So it can oftentimes be very hard to prove that that's what you're dealing with, but a lot of times the symptoms are often enough to make you believe that you're dealing with Demodex. The other thing about Demodex, you're dealing with scabies. One of the other things about scabies is it is contagious to people. So the doctor might ask if anybody in the house is itching or has any red or swollen areas. A lot of times you'll see them around the waistline. It'll be a little red raised area that's very itchy, in which case then, you know, the people have to be treated as well and should see their physician. When you have the dog that you believe has sarcoptic mange, most common way to treat it is with ivermectin. Usually an injection, one injection every 2 weeks for 3 injections will usually clear it up. A lot of times with the initial injection, I'll do a very light steroid just to keep the animal comfortable, but I'll try to avoid that in further injections because I do tend to find sometimes that it slows down the clearance of the actual sarcoptic mite. But it's the trade-off is you want to get them comfortable because these animals can literally rip themselves bloody. So those are your primary external parasites that we see in animals and dogs and cats. And like I said, several of these are potentially contagious to people. So if your pet is on them, you want to talk with your doctor about any contagion factor, and you want to get them treated as soon as possible. So on part 2 of the parasites, we're going to talk about the internal parasites, which are definitely a little more scary when it comes to transmission to people. Not all of them are transmissible, but some are. So we're going to talk about that in part 2. And we'll give you a little more information there. So I hope you learned something about external parasites in dogs and cats. If you have any questions, as always, feel free to shoot me an email at fortheloveofpetspodcast@gmail.com. I will try to answer your question either directly to you or, if possible, in the future on air, we'll address the question as well. So again, I'm Dr. Don Shreves, owner and operator of the Pottsgrove Animal Hospital in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. I hope you have a wonderful day. And as always, remember to keep loving your pets because they're always going to love you. Bye now. We'll see you soon.